Log Talk Radio.
Do we love Tricky, right? If you are a millennial, you may not know that song. No, I don't mean to be disrespectful. This is Nye McGee. Welcome to the Hollywood Hustle Show. Tricky, Revolution Evolution, if you're not familiar with that song. I think it's only fitting to start off because classics is what I want to put here. And classics, I mean 90s, you know, when rock and music and R&B was kind of still good, and 80s. And 70s and 60s, maybe not some modern day stuff during the breaks, but we'll see what we can do. Yes, people, this is the first show. Welcome to the Hollywood Hustle Show. Again, my name is Nye McGee, AKA Nye Hollywood. That's why I got all fumbled when we started off, because I refer to myself as Nye Hollywood. I'm a Chicago girl who works and is living her dream in Hollywood land, right? So thanks for tuning in, guys. So listen, this is my first show, right? We're fingers crossed that we have no technical problems, no hiccups. The call-in number tonight, or today, this afternoon, whatever time it is where you're listening, 646-668-8342. 646-668-8342 if you want to call in and jump in on the discussion. Today we are talking about, I kind of put in the write-up writer's block. Specifically, I want to explore, and maybe my experience will help some writers out there. I want to explore my own recovery from a very, very depressing bout of writer's block. And it was Lee Daniels, surprisingly, who helped me break out of it. And we will get to that very, very shortly. Really quickly, what is this show all about? If you're tuning in, welcome again, the Hollywood Hustle Show. So what is this show all about? Well, this show is pretty much me sharing my hustle as a girl living her dream in Hollywood and the arts, supporting people in the arts, supporting artists. I don't care if you're an indie artist or an A-list artist. I've been passionate about this business since I was like, I've come out the womb, right? I've been passionate about storytelling. I've always wanted to work in Hollywood. I've always wanted to create. And so, you know, I'm doing just that. You know, I don't mean to sound like a cliche, but when they say your dreams really do can come true, I'm living proof of that. And I'm just a small town girl from Markham, Illinois, like seriously. So I wanted to create this show to kind of talk about my journey in the business, maybe my career, what I do, my career journey will inspire some of you. I will bring in guests weekly on the Wednesday show. Bear with me, folks. This is just the formalities. And I'm a bit nervous hosting a show for the first time solo. We'll get to that in a moment. So I'm just kind of going through some of the formalities. And while people are still kind of clicking on the links and trying to figure out how to log in, because I got a call from a person and a text from a person, they're not quite sure where to go. So while we give people a few minutes, I mean, we do have an hour together, if you last that long. While we give people a few minutes to kind of figure out how to tune in, let me just tell you who I am and why I think I'm important enough to share what I do with you. If you care, if you're listening, you probably do. If you're a friend, thank you. So again, I wanted to create the show to share my journey, to offer some career advice, career tips. Wednesdays and Fridays, I'm here at noon Pacific. Right now, I'm testing the waters with an hour show. I'm not sure, you know, we'll see what we can do. My plan is to have guests every Wednesday. For the Wednesday show, and the Friday show is like my Hollywood recap of the celebrities I've interviewed for that week, the tea behind the headlines, because whatever the headlines are printing, trust me, us journalists know what's the truth behind the headlines, and there's always like some truth in the lie or some lie in the truth, right? So the trigger word on this show always is allegedly. No matter what I say on here, I have to say allegedly. When it comes to spilling the tea about celebrities, which we do on Friday show, allegedly, because I don't want to be sued, obviously. And I'm going to try to keep it clean. I was going to drop the B word right there, but I know it's afternoon. Some of you are probably listening at work on your lunch break. I can be a little vulgar sometimes as far as cuss words, and I'm going to try to avoid that. And right there, that was kind of I almost slipped up. So anyway, today we have a guest, Edward M. Ertelak, the author of 11 published novels. His fiction has appeared in dozens of anthologies and periodicals, including the Stoker Award-winning After Death and the Star Wars Insider Magazine. Edward and I have been friends for a very long time. Our friendship goes back like 20 years. I wanted to invite him on this show because, again, he is a published author. I have a lot of friends who are journalists, actors, writers, who are at a point in their life where they want to write books. And so I figure I'd invite Ed on the show and have him share his hustle, his journey as a creative writer and a novelist. Now, here's the thing. I'll be honest with you guys. Because, you know, this is a daytime, I'm hosting live, people have to work, you know, Edward could not join us live. So our conversation was pre-recorded. I'm going to play that In the second half of the hour, because the first hour we're gonna, first half of the hour we're gonna get to this Lee Daniels stuff, right? So, again, how did I come to this? How, what is it about Lee Daniels? What how did he inspire me? Okay, and it's very interesting. Again, I have to kind of go back because, you know, you have to kind of know my journey because that's what this show is about. So again, ever since I was a child, and I won't make this long and drawn out, people, I'll get to the point. Ever since I was a kid, I really had this passion about working in the entertainment business. I wanted to write. I wanted to direct. You know, I admired writers like John Hughes, you know, Steven Spielberg. And I wanted to follow in the footsteps of great Hollywood directors. As a kid and even now as an adult, I love old Hollywood and the golden age and Scandal and Stories and, you know, gossip and rumor. And ever since I was a child, I knew that I wanted to work in entertainment. So I kind of just set, I don't know, maybe it was just destiny, maybe it was just meant to be, but I certainly set off from jump, you know, middle school, high school, to make sure I took classes or courses or associated with people or got jobs and fields that would lead me where I am today, right? So where is that? How did I get here? Long story short, right? So I wanted to be a screenwriter. After high school, graduating, I went to Columbia College in Chicago. Film, you know, majored in film, directing, creating, writing, such and such. Always knew right after graduation I wanted to move to Los Angeles, right, and work in the film business. And I did just that. As soon as I graduated college, I moved to LA, got a job right away working at Miramax Films. A lot of you have seen films that I've edited, Miramax Dimension Films, that I was a post-production editor on. You know, I could rattle off a list of titles, and none of them right now even come to my mind, but I can rattle off actors that I've worked with on their films at Dimension, you know, Salma Hayek, Jay and Silent Bob, those guys, you know, Ben Affleck. He did some movie that was really bad some years ago. I don't even know, but it was a disaster in the department, and it almost caused a lawsuit. A mistake that I made. It was an innocent mistake, but that's a whole other story. I got out right away working at Miramax Films, met a producer there who liked me and, you know, recognized my hard work and passion. And she, even though I was an assistant editor in the post-production department at the time, she would take me along to some of her junkets or featurette tapings, red carpet interviews of celebrities. And basically, I'm not sure that she was trying to teach me how to, be a reporter because she was a producer, but she certainly was teaching me how to interview celebrities. I couldn't have known then that that job would have been preparing me so many years later for what I do now, right? So anyway, long story short, that job at Miramax led to jobs for working for like the Jim Henson Company, you know, Brian and Lisa Henson, who are the children of, you know, the legendary Jim Henson. Of course, we wouldn't have Miss Piggy and the Kermit the Frog without Jim Henson. So, you know, I worked directly for them. I've worked directly for iconic film producer Roger Corman. I've worked for Paramount Pictures, you know, MTV, VH1. I mean, I've worked for a lot of companies in various capacities. And one day I found myself working in advertising sales at Parade Magazine. And in that capacity, one of my roles was to assist the editor who interviewed celebrities. Here we are again, interviewing celebrities. Now, this was 10 years after the Miramax gig, right? So here we are interviewing celebrities. And right around this time, I think blogs were kind of being born, like Perez Hilton and D-List.com, D-Listed. You know, blogs were starting to be born. And I had to, you know, as an assistant to the celebrity editor, I had to stay up to date to what was going on, right? So I'd visit these blogs and such and, you know, leave comments in the comment section and, you know, be smart off with some of the other users. Then one day I realized, you know, I have a voice. I want to say more than what I'm saying in the comments section, right? So I created a blog. It was a snarky blog. It was called dirtywholeberty.com. I don't know what happened to that blog. I don't run it anymore. I think I go to that link now and it's turned into some sort of strange porn site. I think someone snuck in under me when I wasn't looking and just kind of let the blog go and bought the link, the domain once I stopped paying for it. I'm not sure. Anyway, it wasn't a porn site, mydirtywhoreliberty.com. It was a celebrity gossip site, but it was snarky. That blog led into a podcast that I hosted. Some of you, if you're tuning in, you probably were loyal listeners of that podcast, the Dirtylicious Talk Radio Show, right? That podcast lasted for, I don't know, a couple months. We kept getting kicked off because, I shouldn't even say a couple months, like on and off for a year, because we kept getting kicked off the air because we were so vulgar, my co-host and I. We're two vulgar slags, right? So anyway, decided to drop that after a while, the podcast. It was just too much work, too much headache, just trying to have our voices heard as Black women in America, you know, who were sexually aware and powerful and the system wanted to shut us down. So we stopped that show. I continued my blogging. DirtyWhoreLiberty.com eventually turned into another blog, and as the blogs evolved, I got less and less snarky and more, slightly more civil while keeping it real and spilling the tea. I'm quite sure I was spilling the tea before spilling the tea was even a phrase, right? And then one day, this powerful Hollywood player, if you want to call it, you know, gave me a job working for his publication. And as they say, the rest is history. So what do I do now? I interview celebrities. I interview industry players. I interview TV executives. You know, you name it, I interview. Actors, actresses, directors, screenwriters. I've interviewed Sam Jackson, Quentin Tarantino, Anthony Hopkins. I mean, you can go to my Instagram page. Again, just a little history. So we, you know, just to kick off the inaugural show. So people tuning in for the first time, they're like, who is she? Why? Why am I here? Why am I listening to this? I just want you to know that, you know, I will come with some great guests on this show. If you're serious about your career, as a writer or an actor or a director, any kind of creator, a journalist, a blogger, that's what this show is about. This show is about hustling, you know, and the people that I've met along the way as a journalist, as a blogger or a reporter, whatever title you want to throw on what I do. And then that field aside, the relationships that I've built working at various television studios and networks, you know, these are people that I want to invite on the show to talk to you and engage with you and, you know, offer you career advice and invite you to call in and speak to them. Now, how does Lee Daniels tie into this? Well, again, because I've been so consumed with working for the man, sometimes you don't, as a creator, especially as a writer, you don't have, you know, And I came out here, as I said, after I graduated, to write and direct. And while I've worked on lots of productions, and I've done everything that I ever could have dreamed of and more, I've accomplished in the entertainment business, with the exception of, you know, directing my first feature kick-ass film, right? So while I work my 9-to-5 or my 10-hour shift or my 12-hour shift writing and doing studio work or whatever it is I do, I try to put in time for my work, for writing on my projects, okay? Recently, I've been working on a web series, a very dark web series, inspired by The Fall. Are you guys familiar with The Fall on Netflix? God, I love this series. Watch this series. So I decided that I wanted to write a web series about a Black female detective, like a kick-ass ball-busting detective, right? And I also decided that I want the serial killer to be a Black male. No hate, no shade. I just wanted him to be how often do we see a Black male serial killer in a narrative? I think it's worth exploring. But of course, as I would share my ideas with certain people and by certain like close friends and by share my ideas, not reveal the plots, but my small circle of creatives that I trust that I like to go to for advice to help with narrative development or character development. You know, sometimes as a woman, as a woman, you know, I like to go outside of myself and go directly to the source, I should say, to research. And, you know, if I'm writing about a white male who, you know, a certain culture or a white woman, no. Do I feel like I need to be a white woman to write in a white voice? No. Do I feel like I need to be a white male in order to write in a white male's voice? No. but perhaps there's certain experiences from a white male's point of view that I cannot relate to, or you know, will never have, will never experience, that I can tap into directly from the source, right? So in presenting some of my, you know, theories about the black male serial killer, I was met with at every turn, gasps, horror. How dare you? How dare you want to make the black man a serial killer? Do you know what kind of backlash you'll receive from the black community? Do you know what kind of backlash you'll receive from black men? Will suggest that you hate black men. And it's like, hold up. What? Hey, whoa, guys. I just want to write a story here. There's no, you know, freaking conspiracy. You know what I'm saying? There's no hate here. I just want to write a story about a character who's black, male, and he's psychotic, and he kills women. You know, like, what is the problem, right? So there was my block. Suddenly, I was plagued with doubt and fear. Suddenly, I was like, yes, what if they're right? What if I'm not... being no character as a serial killer or a negative light, which is interesting when you think about it, because there's a whole show dedicated on, you know, negative black male imagery. It's, I think it's called First 48, and black people especially, I know they watch it, you know. However, I realize we live in a society where if you are black and you have a vagina and a voice and you dare to do something that is like not submissive, you risk ridicule, right? You risk being challenged, your ideas, you know. If Tyler Perry wanted to write a story about a black male serial killer, I bet everyone would go watch it, right? Madea kills the serial killer, you would go and watch it, right? So how does Lee Daniels come into this? Well, a couple months ago, I was invited to do a conference call, a media teleconference call with Lee Daniels. And it was while he was promoting the show Star with Tyrese, right? Now, prior to this call, again, I was played with, how do I move forward with this web series? Because, you know, I have my talent, I have my crew, I have my locations. I just need to write it and get it done, right? But there I am stuck, not sure how I should approach my black male character. Suddenly, my black male character became a white male. Let's just keep it real. I was like, man, you're right. Because my friends were like, well, most serial killers are depicted as white men. Blah, 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 blah. The white man is this. The white man is that. He should be the white man because white men are blah, 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 blah. Okay, right? Let's just sum it up, blah, 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 right? You get the point. So I said, okay, let me cave, let me be a puppet. In this moment, I lost weakness. I disrespected my creator because, of course, my gift is not my own. It's my creator's, right? God. And I was a disrespect. I was ashamed because I said, I will not do what I want to do. I will not, you know, express the character the way I want to express him. I will do what they want. And it's not about what they want, right? And I knew this in the moment, but still, I was plagued with doubt and fear. So this went on for weeks. I couldn't write. I could not move past like the first 10 pages I had written with this white male serial killer because, listen, we know. We've seen 100 white male serial killers. We get it. But I don't want a white male serial killer. I want him to be black, okay? So there I am on the call with Lee Daniels. And I'm talking to Lee Daniels about his creative process. And I'm talking to Lee Daniels about his appreciation for black women. And I'm talking to Lee Daniels about, and by appreciation, I know there's some black women out there listening right now like, Lee Daniels shades black women. He doesn't like us. Well, I disagree. And I have an article up on EUR, my full article that I write for EUR.com explores my conversation more and his inspiration about with black women. His inspiration by, you know, of black women. And so I don't agree that he shade, you know, disrespects or hates black women. So, and my conversation with him pretty much confirmed that, right? I was satisfied with that, the answer that he gave me. Later on in the conversation with myself and other journalists, the aha moment came. Lee gave me my dose of medicine when he spoke about how Black people are afraid, the Black audience and a lot of Black creators are afraid to tell some truths about our culture, because sometimes we don't want to see it, and it's not fair, right? Y'all are blowing me up on the phone over here, if you can hear it in the background. And then he said something about how he faced a similar situation when he was working with Sam Jackson and the Woodsmen. So what I'm going to do is play this little bit of audio, the conversation that the statement that Lee made, and you'll kind of see why this was a dose of medicine for me. You'll see why after I heard this, not only was I a Lee Daniels fan, okay, I never doubted myself again, and I won't going forward as far as creatives and how I want to push my narrative, right? So let's go ahead and play this. And I see we have a guest on the line. Let me see if I can add the guest to the show. Hold on here. Now, let me see. Caller, are you there?
I am.
Oh, I know who this is. Welcome to the Hollywood Hustle Show. This is Nye Hollywood. Introduce yourself.
Yo, what's good? Hollywood Hustle. This your boy Redbeard, the one and only. What's good?
You know, Redbeard, if you personally know Redbeard, then you know who he is in my life personally. We are related. I did ask him to call into the show. He is a Chicago artist here, and this show is all about creatives and celebrating the arts and promoting artists. And I have a song, you know, what are we playing tonight? Your summer song? This is your summer anthem?
This is one of the many summer joints that I'm set to release. Well, it's actually released already on iTunes. If you like it when you hear it, go ahead and grab your copy. It's called Get Lost in the Music, hot joint featuring Tone P, a banger. Flawless Tracks produced it. Check it out when you put it in rotation.
All right, well, really quick, we're going to put you on hold for 1 second, and I am going to play this clip with Lee Daniels for the listeners, because they're patiently waiting, and we're going to come back and get into this conversation. And then I see we only have about 30 minutes left on the show. We got to get to my interview with Mr. Ed Erdelak. So here we go, the Lee Daniels conversation, and AKA my dose of medicine. Now, it's really quick. It's only a minute, so here we go.
We should not be on a pedestal. We should not be like on a place where white people can get around and play whatever they want to play. You know, I remember I did a movie called The Woodsman, and it was right after Monsters Ball. And Sam Jackson I offered it to Sam. I was going to do it with Sam. I didn't offer it to him. But my mom said, if you have a black man play a pedophile, don't come into my house again. So I literally shift gears and took it and went from Sam to Kevin. But was that fair to Sam as an artist? Like, as an artist, we need complicated roles. Like, we are human, and we always have to put ourselves up like we're on this pedestal. And in doing that, we marginalize ourselves. Yes, people will think a certain way about us, but you know what? Let them, because they think a certain way about a white man, too.
And there you have it. Where's the lie, right? Where exactly is the lie? And I remember, while perhaps those words were perhaps meaningless to some listeners, but when you're a passionate writer and writer's block is serious for some of us, right? I was moved to tears when he said that, because he was speaking to me in that moment, because that's exactly what I was going through with my character. And it's like, we have to be fearless. You know, I walked away from that saying, we have to be fearless creators, regardless of our race or our gender. But as Lee said further on in various other parts of that conversation, Black creators get put up on this. We're expected to, you know, jump over mountains to tell our stories. We can explore a range of narratives, of emotions, without there being some sort of question mark behind it. You know what I'm saying? Like, where's our American Beauty? And American Beauty was a damn good film. you know? And that's just an example. You know, science fiction and alien and horror. That's I'm a huge fan of science fiction, alien, horror, and dark dramas, right? And that's what I like to write about. And I'd like to see more people of color behind the scenes, in front of the scenes, and especially in the creative, in fantasy films and fantasy roles, right? But I'm wondering, I mean, are there black writers out there listening to this show right now who struggle with the same thing, right? How often are you plagued with doubt and question yourself about how you should explore a black character, especially when you turn on the television and most of, you know, our black characters are portrayed so negatively, you know? There's very little black on black positive love or imagery on these shows, right? We're either fighting, bickering. I've noticed that I've been thinking about starting a website, and I shouldn't tell y'all because somebody might listen and copy it, but that's fine because I have too many other things to do. Maybe somebody has a lot of time to put into this. But there's I've been thinking about creating this website where I make a list of commercials and TV shows and movies that feature black folks and have like a stereotype board, and you check off all the stereotypes that they meet, right? Okay, broken home, check. Gay black son, check. You know, husband and wife hate each other, check. right? Bickering and fighting, the black women hate each other, check. Everybody's in an interracial relationship, and that's where they find their happiness, check, right? So I'm wondering how many black creatives struggle with how to approach their black characters. And I'm not talking to the ones who, you know, got it figured out. I'm not talking to you guys who are like, you know what, I don't have that problem, girl. I write what I want to write. We get it. Most of us do. Sometimes as a black creative, especially as a black woman who writes, I believe many of us, you know, have these questions, have these doubts, have these struggles, right? Do you want to call in? We have, 27 minutes left in the show. 646-668-8342. Redbeard, you there? Let me get Redbeard back on the line.
I'm listening. Trust
Redbeard, what you think about this, what I'm talking about here? Is it making any sense at all?
It makes perfectly good sense, because as I was sitting there listening to the clip that you played in Lee Daniels, and I applied that to the music, because it's like, why as an artist would you keep yourself in a box? You need to step outside of the box and try new things. So me being a hip-hop artist, why just keep myself in a box of rap? I want to step outside and do rock and roll. I want to step outside and do country, polka, salsa, dance. I'm an artist, so I should be able to create with no limitations. So for him to say that about Sam Jack and not being allowing Sam Jack to, you know, create something that he's never done before. Right, exactly. Don't marginalize yourselves, people. Don't ever marginalize yourself and settle. You know, you got to always do better than the last project. The last project was a stepping stone to elevate yourself to do better in the next project. So the fact that he even approached Sam Jack with a role like that, whoa, and that he didn't get to do it. Now picture the roles that Sam Jack had done. You would say, man, he probably would have nailed that pedophile role.
Oh, of course. And imagine the conversation
like
that would have been
Snake,
had.
Black Snake Moan. Remember the movie Black Snake Moan?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. See, he probably would have nailed that.
But not only that, imagine the conversation that could have been had in the black community, especially where people and children and even adults who were victims of sexual abuse, right? Imagine the conversation that could have been had if Sam Jackson played that role, you know, a black man playing a pedophile. It resonates so deeply in so many black homes, right?
Yeah,
and listen, this is a universal conversation. It black, white creatives, because I had a white girlfriend of mine ask me once, was it okay? Because she's a writer. She's like, is it okay if I even write a black character? You know, because, and of course she knew it was okay, but she was asking me because of the images that she sees, how we're portrayed on television. you know?
Right.
And that was a
right.
whole other conversation that we had, and she didn't know the best way to approach writing her black female character. So listen, before we run out of time, I want to get to my friend, my good friend Ed Erdelak, published author, here to share his hustle with the Hollywood Hustle Show. We're going to play that track. Maybe we're going to play your track, your song, Red Beer, Lost in the Music, and then we're going to jump right into the Ed Erdelak interview. Again, you still have time to call into the show, 646-668-8342, here on the Hollywood Hustle Show. We'll be right
yep.
back.
Yeah.
Let's take it from the top. The walls are sweating here. It's a party, baby.
Yeah, yeah.
Chill out. If you want it, girl, you got it, girl. Come here and dance with me, because this is your world. Keep you company,
girl.
You got the front with me,
girl.
We'll be floating and zoning so dangerously.
Chill out.
We high, feeling alive. Just don't be shy. Be shy, girl. Hey, low. Hey, low. Hey, low. I say get low. I'm so damn low. What the hell am I at? Ain't no turning back. Hold up, hold up, hold up, hold up. Let me get low. In fact, we'll ride it since she's bothered. And getting hotter and hotter. And I got her. She getting it. She gone. In the zone, her marbles, she lost them. Ain't no coming back, and I'm with her. They can't find her. I'm sweating, she's sick, that's sick. Got me lost in the beat, I need an engineer. I told her, come here, get a little closer. Take your shirt off, it's hot in here. Hey, to get lost, it's a beat, it's a music. Feel better now, I read my energy. She's dangerous, and I'm floating. Keep dancing, girl. Keep moving, girl, don't worry about who looking, just get lost in the music, keep dancing, girl, keep moving, girl, I say don't worry about who looking, just get lost in the music, you want it, girl, you got it, girl, come here and dance with me, because this is your world.
Right on. I did announce on my Instagram page, and all my social media links are on the Blog Talk Radio page, the Hollywood Hustle show page here on Blog Talk Radio. Just go to the show page, maybe however you're listening to the show right now, just look up at the top of the page. Maybe all the links to my social media are there. I did announce on Instagram that I'm giving away a Blu-ray DVD copy, digital HD of Sleepless. So if you want it, the first person who goes on my Instagram, likes the photo, okay? I put a photo on there earlier, a couple hours ago, that says Nye Hollywood, announcing the show. The first person who goes on there, likes it, and hashtags the Hollywood Hustle Show, you get it, right? Hashtag Hollywood Hustle Show, you win. So here we go. Ed Erdelak interview. Let's get right into it, guys. Again, this is pre-recorded. If you want to know how to get in contact with Ed after this show, again, his information is on the show page as well.
Do you believe in writer's block? And are there any specific tricks you use to overcome it?
Okay, so I hope this isn't, like, disappointing, given that this is the basis of the show and everything, but I don't know that I really believe in writer's block. 9 times out of 10, if I'm totally being honest, the block is just me being lazy. You know, it's just a matter of sitting down and putting pen to paper. It's a time commitment you just, you know, you have to make. And every day you put off, it's just another day further from release is how I look at it. Maybe, you know, maybe it helps to look at it that way.
Now, how long on average does it take you to write a book?
About 3 to 4 months from the outline to the end when I finally set myself down. Like, and especially with Andersonville, which where I was on a timeline for Random House and everything, that took me 3 months because, you know, I had, like, check-in times that I had to, like, have stuff delivered by outlines and that kind of thing. So when I'm really on a schedule, 3 months was for a full novel.
And as far as research is concerned, what kind of research do you do? And I'm sure it depends on the topic of the book, but I guess specifically, how long do you usually spend researching before beginning a book?
Yeah, it totally depends on the work. Like, I do a lot of historical fantasy and horror, and to make the supernatural stuff believable, you totally have to sell the setting. Like, you have to have the mundane stuff down. So I'll research places and, you know, language and events. But basically, if I'm writing anything at all that's other than, you know, a 42-year-old straight white father of four, I'm doing a lot of research. So it's kind of hard to say how much time I spend on it. It's like I feel like I'm doing it all the time in my off reading, researching stuff I haven't really necessarily started working on. But it's definitely an off-kilter kind of ratio because, like, okay, so the other day I spent 2 hours researching rainbow gravity theory, this scientific postulate for a character who's like a grad student. And I wound up with, like, 3 paragraphs out of that. But, you know, it was 3 paragraphs where I really had to sound like I knew what I was talking about, so I still kind of consider it, you know, time well spent.
Now, is researching the most difficult part of your artistic process?
I find it the easiest. Creating from whole cloth is definitely the hardest part. When I'm, I like learning, so I like kind of losing time. I lose a lot of time. I don't say I like losing time, but I lose a lot just going down rabbit holes of research sometimes and finding little nuggets that, you know, make the story better and everything. I really enjoy that part of it.
Now, how did publishing your first book change your process of writing?
So when I came out here from Chicago to California, I came out to do screenwriting, and I'd been screenwriting with zero success for like 5 years, 6 years. I'd written dozens of screenplays, and it was all at my own pace because you know, there was nobody at the end of it. It was a lot of cold call submissions and not getting a lot of responses and everything. So I really had no idea if I was even any good because I wasn't getting any kind of response. When I finally had my first book published and I saw that it got a relatively immediate response from readers and reviewers, I kind of got addicted to that. So, you know, it kind of amped up my turnaround time. I wrote faster. I was more diligent because there was an appreciative audience at the other end of it that was actively looking forward to stuff, especially when I was doing my Macabre Rider series. You know, everybody was looking forward to the next installment. I was getting fan email for the first time and everything. And, you know, so that was cool. It kind of motivated me more than screenwriting had.
Now, really quickly, just to kind of piggyback off that, your efforts in publishing your first book, did you just follow the usual format of sending out query letters and just waiting for a response?
Yeah, totally. And I started with the, you know, you work from the top down. So I started with the big publishers, didn't get much response. But then I started working with indie publishers, and that was when, this was like 2008 or 2009 when they were really starting to come out a lot. And the first one I worked with wasn't even that great, but it still, the book was good enough where it managed to still kind of get a response. So, yeah, but I sent out query letters, and I think the first thing I had published was actually a short story in England. Like, it took a British press to finally get me. And then I did, I got a Star Wars job after that. They had a hyperspace on StarWars.com, Lucasfilm's official website, had this contest, and it was one of the only contests I ever entered, where you just kind of, just because I'm a Star Wars nerd, where you basically, they would have like a shot of a character from the background and ask you to like create the backstory for this unknown character, and I won it. Like, it was open to every fan, and it was like once a month, and I won it like 3 months in a row, and from that, one of the editors included me in an open call for stories, and that was my first totally pro sale, you know.
Right on.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
Now, do you try to be more, do you try to be, like, more original in what you deliver, or do you find that it's best to cater to what you think the reader wants?
that's a slippery slope because, like, oh, at this point, I still pretty much write the things I would want to read because trying to anticipate what an audience might like and write for that, it's like trying to, you know, catch the wind in a bottle or something. If you write what seems popular in the moment, you're probably chasing a trend and it's already too late. So I think it's best to do what you feel, and if you love what you're working on, the passion will come through and people respond to it, you know, they'll latch onto it.
Now, just really quickly for our listeners, what genres do you prefer to tackle?
I started out writing straight westerns, which was just like I couldn't find anybody to publish those, you know. And then I started adding like a supernatural element, and that was where I finally found a niche, you know, basically. So I do a lot of paranormal stuff, supernatural. I'm moving finally into present day, you know, because like I did a lot of historical like horror. I did weird westerns. I did you know, Vietnam era stuff. I've worked like in the past a lot, and I'm doing a Zora Neale Hurston series set in the 20s and everything, where she's like an occult investigator and stuff like that. I just had a 70s PI story come out, but I'm kind of working more towards getting into modern day and everything, and I'm branching out into fantasy a little bit now too. So I kind of want to try to cover everything. It's just wherever my interest leads, pretty much.
Now, what are some of the challenges you face trying to get original content published?
Gatekeepers, I feel like, are the number one impediment. I'm trying not to sound bitter, but I mean, like big publishers who don't take unsolicited submissions, unimaginative editors, short-sighted agents. They'll like repeatedly, I get told they love what I do, but they don't know how to sell it. So I worked once with I had a frontline editor for a big publishing house, a fantasy house, who responded positively to an in-person pitch I did at a convention and invited me to submit the manuscript to her. But like a year later, I still hadn't heard anything. So I queried her again, asking what she thought of it. And she finally returned me this letter that the house was not prepared to publish a novel featuring a Nazi protagonist. Now, the book was set in World War II, and the protagonist was a Jewish kid. So I kind of thought it was obvious that you passed it down to some assistant and he hadn't read past the first few pages, you know? So it's kind of like a challenge getting past those guys. And that's rough. That's the hardest part, I think. I said, I'm totally trying not to sound bitter because I understand they got to have a vetting process and everything, but I don't know. I wish there were more diligent people in the front line there sometimes.
Yeah. Now, I saw a post you made on Facebook recently about how hard self-publishing is. So why are you considering self-publishing now, and what are some of the challenges you are discovering with this process?
So the only time I've ever self-published was in the fourth book of my series. I mentioned I wasn't really too happy with the publisher, and I didn't want to wait another 5 years for the fourth book to come back to me. So I like the rights for it to come back to me. So I self-published that one, and I didn't know what I was doing. I had a lot of people helping me out with it and stuff. This one is the first one. I'm doing a collection called Angler in Darkness. It's 18 stories from the first half of my career that I just kind of like pulled from magazines and stuff that have been sold. And the stuff's already been edited, and I figured I already got paid for it. So I've got paid for each of these stories already, so I kind of wanted something that my own fans would be able to just kind of reach and grab, you know, a grab basket of the stuff that I've written that they might not have caught because they haven't bought every magazine, you know, in the world. But so I hired an artist, and I hired a, cover designer. Sean King's a really good, great cover designer. He works for some of the bigger publishers. He's just a cool guy. M. Wayne Miller's the artist. And, I was just looking to try to control a book from beginning to end and see how, because sometimes I'm not happy with the covers I get or I'm not happy with the layouts, and I wanted to see what it was like to control it fully from my end. Well, and it's pretty hard. The thing you mentioned on Facebook, the stuff I was bitching about was mainly I had a technical thing I screwed up. I had the release dates for different e-formats of the same book coming out a month apart because Amazon Kindle Direct Publishing is really rigid on not changing things once they're submitted. It was my fault, but you know, it was something I never had to do. So, you know, I'd hope there'd be some leeway, but there ain't. aside from that, it's seeing how aligned everything is against self-publishing. Like the industry is very against self-publishing. From review sites like Publishers Weekly and Kirkus, you know, their submission policies are a lot different for self-publishing stuff. Even a lot of the indie sites don't want to take it. And I completely understand why, because there's a slew of writers who just throw stuff up with no editing, you know, no kind of editing process. But it's a pain to deal with, but it's rewarding to see how nice the book looks, you know, on the other end when you're done, I think.
Now, how have the writers that you're friends with, help you to become a better writer?
It's a good deal. Networking with other writers is pretty important, and it's a lot easier, you know, in this age with the internet and Facebook and all that. There are markets I wouldn't have even heard about except by invitation from people I know and word of mouth and stuff like that. And, you know, other writers have fans, and those fans trust their opinion, so if they recommend you, it's kind of an expansion of your market and everything. But in terms of, like, the nitty-gritty craft, I don't really tend to share unfinished work with other writers. Like, I have one friend who's a writer whose opinion I trust, but I really only go to him if I'm, like, having a problem and I can't find my way out of it or something. Like, I kind of trust my own instincts enough to not go to another writer most of the time.
Now, during your journey as a writer, let's just go back to, you know, teenage years, for instance, and considering what you have learned along the way from then and now, what do you think are some of the common traps for aspiring writers?
Right now, exposure markets are a big one. Like, when you're first starting out, all you want to do is see your name in print, and you're trying to make this thing, you know, get out there, and you're just trying to get somebody to believe in you. And but if you're going to try to make this into more than a hobby, you absolutely can't just give your work away. Like they say, people die of exposure, you know? So, like, you absolutely have to get paid, always get paid. Even if it's, like, you know, a token payment starting out, that's fine, but don't go for the, like, profit-sharing anthologies and stuff like that, because the profit is basically going to be your friends and family if you can get them to buy it, and it's not worth it. There's also these, like, weirdo pay-to-publish scams, and they're always scams. An author should never drop a dime on getting their own work made on getting their own work out there, unless they're doing it all themselves, you know? So I would say those.
Now, Ed, what do you think is the most costly part of writing? Would you say it is hiring an editor or the graphics person?
I don't know what's happening
with
the audio.
If you really want a good eye-popping cover, that's where the most of the money is going to go. And editing money, I would say, like, cover one, editing two, book designer three, you know, in terms of the most expensive.
Now, if you had to do something differently as a child or a teenager to become a better writer as an adult, what would you do?
I think I would have traveled more, and I probably wouldn't have finished college. Like, I went to college for screenwriting, and once I got the basis of screenwriting, I don't really feel like I needed to study it that much anymore. It was more important for me to come out here to Los Angeles, I think, and just jump into the industry and get your feet wet and, you know, get on shoots and stuff like that. I would have done that, I think. And as far as, like, experience, I just would have traveled more, so I don't have to – I wouldn't be researching as much, you know, if I hadn't just gone out and seen more things. I mean, just live your life.
Now,
you know, you have more stories to tell if you, you know, go out and make those stories, you know.
This is true. This is true. Do you think writers, aspiring just book writers or novelists, not necessarily screenwriters, because I agree with you about the film school, and once you know the fundamentals of screenwriting, you don't need to spend like 4 years in college learning that. But
no,
what say you about just creative storytelling if you want to write a book? Do you think one needs to invest in like a four-year university to fully grasp what it takes to write a book, get it published, formatting, et cetera, et cetera?
I think if you've had a good couple of English classes, you know, even in high school, like if you've done any kind of literary, you know, any classes where you've broken down like Winesburg, Ohio or To Kill a Mockingbird. I mean, like if you've paid attention during those classes and understood, you know, that you can make a story about more than the plot, you know, if you can have like underlying message and stuff like that. And you can kind of, if you can understand that, I don't really think you need to go to college for creative writing either. No, probably not. It's the same. You get the fundamentals. And then go out and write your stories, basically.
Now, does writing energize you, or do you find it exhausting sometimes?
Well, I do mine in the morning. I do my writing 2 hours in the morning, every morning. So it's the first thing I do when I get up. It kind of frees my brain for the rest of the day. So I kind of feel it's, like, liberating. You know, like I'm not thinking about what I have to do all day because I get it out of the way as soon as I can. But, like, when I'm towards the end of a book and I'm really trying to finish and I'm up till, like, 3 or 4 in the morning, it's pretty exhausting, I guess, but it's a good kind of exhaustion, like, you know, I guess like sex or something, you know? I mean,
right.
When you're done, like, when you're done, you feel you've accomplished something, if you did it right, I guess.
Exactly. And let's see here, a couple more questions before we wrap it up. What does literary success look like to you?
Geez, probably ask me in 5 years, hopefully. I'd like to just have a steady income, enough to where I'm writing 4 to 8 hours a day instead of two, you know, like I don't have any other time commitments with work or a day job or anything like that. I'd like to return to film again. I'd like to branch out into comics, maybe do TV. Like, just being a full-time writer is success for me. Not necessarily, you know, a freaking boat or anything like that, but just the time and the money to kind of just make that my job and nothing else. That's success.
Now, what advice do you offer aspiring writers? I hate to say the word aspiring, because if you're writing, you're writing, like Shonda Rhimes kind of said, right?
Right.
But what kind of advice, I mean, writers hit you up for advice about how to take their craft to the next level. I mean, do you find that there are common tips that you have for writers?
I got three things I always say, and one is from me and two are from two other guys. The one thing I always say is write what you know you love, like write what you want to see out there that isn't there yet, something you'd want to read, something you'd want to see. That's mine. From Stephen King, I got from his On Writing book, you should read 100 words for every word you write, like, and not just in your genre, like branch out, read literary, read romance, read horror. If you don't read that, read a Western, read like something from Japan, you know, whatever, just read, read, read. And from Joe Lansdale, who, you know, is doing Happen Leonard right now, he told me and a table of other guys I was sitting with, writing is a muscle, and it requires regular scheduled exercise or it atrophies. So you've got to set aside time every day, no matter what, even if you, you know, are just working on your blog or something like that. You know, just write something to keep the muscle, you know, strong.
And I believe this may be my last question. What marketing efforts do you use or do you suggest are good? Now, you kind of mentioned Amazon. What other marketing efforts do you use or do you suggest are good tools for writers?
Marketing is tough, especially for like an indie writer. When you get a traditional publisher like Random House, they're going to do a lot of that for you, and it's awesome. It's like a great feeling, but and they really expand you and everything. So, you know, book tours, if you can do it, go to cons, get a table, stuff like that, get your book out there, meet fans, make eye contact with people, that kind of thing. There's a lot of indie review sites out there, depending on your genre, that you can find on Facebook. I mean, there are groups you can join on Facebook to find stuff. One thing I've learned a lot from other writers on Facebook is when you're on Facebook, though, don't just push your books. You know, be a human being, talk, be a person. If you friend somebody and then 5 minutes later send them, you know, a link to your book, they're not going to buy it. They're going to delete you and stuff, you know. So otherwise, for marketing, local radio shows are good, podcasts like this one,
panels.
You know.
You spoke about panels earlier. You've spoken at panels. You would say that's good if you get invited.
yeah, you kind of got to get invited. But that's part of that's part of networking, too. Like, I got on a panel at San Diego Comic Convention, and it was because of some writers that I was in a, you know, anthology with for like Ragnarok books or something, and they had a spot and they were like, hey, you want to join in? I was like, hell yes. So just jump at the opportunities, you know, take them where you can get them.
And I swear, right on people. That was my buddy Ed Erlach. Thank you, Ed. There were probably some technical issues. I know there was, and so what I'm going to do after this show, if you're listening and if you couldn't hear, we only have a few seconds left in the show, and if you couldn't hear parts of that conversation, I'm going to upload it separately later, maybe up on my YouTube. Check back on my social media, maybe my Twitter or my Facebook page later. Nye McGee at Facebook, Indie Art Swag on Twitter, Writer Nye McGee at Instagram. I'll try to, you know, replace that audio or get a better clean version. Redbeard, thank you. Are you there, Redbeard? Thank you for joining me today. I don't think I can hear him. I hear him talking, but I don't think I hear him on the show. Redbeard, I don't think I hear you, buddy. but I appreciate it. I can hear you talking, but you're not quite coming through. But thank you for tuning in tonight. We're going to have you back probably Friday or one day next week to get a full interview during our music hip-hop show, which is coming up in a couple weeks. So this has been the Hollywood Hustle Show. Couple seconds left. Tune in Friday, Hollywood recap, what's going on in Hollywood.
We're going to be talking about Spilling the Tea Friday, 12 noon. Be here, folks. Thanks for tuning in. A replay of this show will be uploaded on the front page here on Blog Talk Radio in about an hour.